The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, the most pressing issue for many people as we look towards a new government, perhaps the swap that's happening in the next week or so, but beyond that to an election in a couple of years' time, most pressing issue is probably housing. And the Minister for Housing, Local Government and Heritage, Dara O'Brien, is on the line. Minister, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
So much to talk about, but let's start maybe about a little bit of good news. It does appear that housing completions might be ahead of target this year.
Yeah, the projections are good, Pat. We're going to have very strong delivery, thankfully, in the last quarter of this year. We'd set a target of just short of 25,000 this year under Housing for All, and I'm confident to say that we will exceed it, and quite substantially, which will be a big jump up on the last 2 years. So that's good news. You know, we need to do a lot more, and I know that too, but it's about building capacity within the sector to deliver the homes that we need.
And, okay, you know, so that's the good news.
Straight
to the bad news, housing starts are down, which means completions next year won't hit target.
Yeah, housing starts are down just in the last month, okay, to October, and there's, looking into the reasons for that, some of it relates to increased cost of financing developments as well. We're living in an environment now that is higher interest rate environment, as people will know as well. Having said that, we have a target next year of 29,000. We're going to use other activation measures to do our level best to attain and indeed exceed that. They're kind of monthly figures, Pat, so I wouldn't be, you know, putting too much store in them. They are an indication, no question. Like, there are challenges out there on the funding side, no question of that. But we're looking, and we are right now, looking at partnering through the Land Development Agency with some stalled permissions and planning permissions that have been granted to look to how we could bring them into affordable housing.
Yeah.
And so we're going to be active in that space.
Now, Minister, you know, when you have stalled housing permissions, you know, people who have permissions and don't build, it does seem to me, you know, the bank won't give you the money to buy a house or an apartment unless you can prove you can service it. And yet we give permissions to developers who then cry the poor mouth and say, oh, we got this permission, but we can't afford to build it. Maybe that's something you need to put into your new planning scenario, your new planning act. If you can't afford to build it, don't ask us for permission. You are wasting our time.
Yeah, look, it's a fair point, and I think we saw that really acutely if we go back even over a year when I would have been talking to you about the controversy around what was proposed as co-living. You remember that they did abolish it, and we did see many instances where sites that had permission, where people were going back in for further permissions to effectively intensify or densify the development to increase its paper value. That's no use to anyone, and that's why I took the move to ban co-living. I do think it's slightly different now in some instances, I'm not saying in all, whereby that because of the difficulties with funding some developments, particularly around apartments, that they have stalled in that sense. Now, what we're looking to do, like, we want more affordable housing for working people, and we're delivering that this year, but we want to step that up. So I do think there are going to be opportunities for the state to get involved there, that we're delivering apartments and homes, affordable homes for working people. And I think we'll be able to do that to activate some of those stalled permissions. And we're actually working through a project with the Land Development Agency called Project Tussie. We've had a lot of interest in that, and we're assessing those very specific proposals that we could pretty much move on straight away.
But are you talking about either buying existing permissions from developers and then the state doing it itself? Or are you talking about giving money to developers so they can do it?
No, what we're looking at doing, sorry to be clear, Pat, we're looking at effectively partnering in some instances where we'll be able to say, well, we're going to take 50% of that development as affordable homes for our people. And that can provide the certainty around the funding. It depends on each project, but it would be very much on the basis of delivering those homes for affordable housing and indeed getting our quota of social housing within those developments. Because you rightly at the very start pointed to the, you know, the good numbers for the end of this year, and that is welcome. Next year, we will do more, but we need to do more than that to catch up with supply that or demand that hasn't been met for the last 10, 12 years.
Now, in the meantime, we heard Simon Harris talking yesterday about the partnership with university campuses, and that's welcome because it when they're finally built, maybe a year or two away before completion, they take students or some students, a couple of thousand students maybe, out of the rental market and freeing that up for other people who are finding it difficult to get accommodation. Every new unit, however it is supplied, eases the housing crisis somewhat. But meantime, we're told with this impending really cold winter in Ukraine, Europe may be braced for millions of more Ukrainian refugees. What preparation are you as housing minister, and Catherine Day says it should be across all departments, not just Roderick O'Connor's department, what preparations are you making for that scenario?
Yeah, just firstly, if I could mention just briefly on what Simon Harris brought forward yesterday with student accommodation is really welcome, and we've worked closely with Simon on that. And you're 100% right. Any unit we can deliver in any sector helps. And I think this will be an important pathfinder project, actually, for affordable student accommodation that we'll be able to deliver by the state stepping in and doing it. So I very much welcome that. Now, to get to your question with regard to Ukraine, we've already, as your listeners will know, accommodated over 60,000 Ukrainians, and rightly so. And we've done that through a combination of both pledges, hotel accommodation, and we're stepping up the refurbs. We're also refurbing of existing properties, many old schools, commercial properties, that type of thing for semi-permanent accommodation. And we will be delivering modular as well. We've identified a number of sites for the first 750 modular homes that will be delivered for our friends from Ukraine, because you're right, with what's happening in Ukraine at the moment, we've seen a stepping up of the brutal attacks there by Putin and Russian forces, attacking infrastructure, attacking energy infrastructure in particular. So, you know, it is a cross-government approach chaired by the Taoiseach. We have a big role in that, in housing too. And our local authorities are now managing the second call for properties for vacant holiday homes, for example. And they're managing that in every local authority.
But you have a member of your own party, the Clare deputy, Cathal Crowe, calling for a cap on the number of Ukrainian refugees arriving on the basis that, you know, we can't cope.
Well, I don't agree with Cathal, and I think in this instance he's wrong. We have obligation under international law, but I think we have a moral obligation too. And we have handled it. It hasn't been without its difficulties or challenges, but I think if anyone was asked in January of this year that we would accommodate over 60,000 new arrivals, and as I said, not without its challenges, but we've done that. And that doesn't include people from other countries who are fleeing persecution too, about another 15,000. So we've obligations under international law, but I put it more strongly than that, and more importantly, we've a moral obligation as a country to do everything we can. And I fully understand that there are communities right across the country. We wouldn't be able to do this without their support. And some communities are under pressure, and we're looking at how we can alleviate that for them through additional community funds and facilities. And it hasn't been easy right across the country, but we will not be bringing in a cap. And I think in this instance, I can say very clearly in this instance, I don't agree with Deputy Keogh.
The modular homes that are being provided, a small number of them, relatively speaking, are they going to be permanent homes? In other words, when Ukrainian families find it safe to go back to their own country, and pretty much most people do want to do that, unless they're economic migrants, that those will be vacated. Are they kind of long-term accommodation that will be available to the indigenous Irish people on the housing waiting lists?
Yeah, I would see certainly opportunities there, actually, Pat, because these are good quality homes. They're as long-lasting as what we would have called traditional builds. And we're actually going to step up the delivery of modular for social housing also. And these are, you know, off-site construction. Some wooden frame, some concrete poured as well. There's a lot of companies in Ireland doing really good work in that space. And I intend to, we're talking about delivery for next year, to further ramp up our social housing delivery next year by using modern methods of construction, yeah. like off-site construction. And I've seen them at work. Like, I've seen off-site construction houses being used in Limerick, for example, that the local authority are using there very successfully, efficiently.
But in terms of, you know, emergency accommodation, I've seen, for example, housing made of shipping containers. There's a demo example, actually, in the car park beside Naas County Council. They can pop in and have a look, which would be suitable maybe for a couple with one small child. You can buy them for less than 80 grand. You know, so what's not attractive about that as a temporary fix for people who will be here on a temporary basis, and then they can be redeployed as student accommodation or whatever.
All options like that have been looked at, and I've seen those that type of dwelling as well. What we're really looking at on the off-site construction is, you know, more permanent homes. That would be what we would bring in. For additional social housing.
I'm just thinking, though, that even a shipping container, standard shipping container, is better than a hotel room. You've got your own fridge, your own cookery.
I agree. You know. I agree. But, like, as I said, in relation to international protection and what we're doing for our friends in Ukraine, we're using all different methods of actually delivering accommodation there. Mm. And you will see a stepping up of the refurbishment and, indeed, the modular homes. And that's happening already. We've handed over already on refurbished properties bed spaces for about over 2,000 bed spaces. There's more in train. We're working through that. There are, you know, complications or challenges, should I say, around getting people to do that work as well, because we've a lot of people working in construction in all different parts of it. So, you know, we don't have people queuing up to do that work. So we've got to manage it very carefully and manage it, you know, on a regular basis to make sure we're bringing refurbished properties back into use.
The next problem you have to deal with is the dysfunctional onboard planola, and you have a new planning bill which you're trying to push through fairly rapidly. You want the Seanad to look at it over the space of just 1 week instead of probably several months. What are the elements in this new planning bill, and, you know, will you have it in law before Christmas?
Yeah, there's one big planning bill, if I could use that phrase, the consolidated planning bill that I'll bring to Cabinet on the 13th of December and publish it. That's around planning reform and how our system works. And it's the biggest overhaul of planning since the year 2000. So that one won't be going to the Seanad or to the Dáil before Christmas, but will go to Cabinet. The bill that I'm bringing to the Seanad next week is one that I've flagged over the last few months as part of the Onboard Planola reform. Effectively, what that does is increase the number of board members in Onboard Planola, bans things formally like the two-person boards. It brings about the start of the restructure itself of Onboard Planola. And something I mentioned to you when we were talking in the last month was changing how the appointments are made to the boards. Like, this archaic system of appointments coming through a panel system, I want that changed. And I want, you know, normal public advertising for positions that will go to an expert panel and recommendations will be made to me. So the changes that I'm bringing forward in advance of Christmas are urgent. They're needed. And this is the first step in much needed reform of how Onboard Planola is structured, but secondly, how it works. And I do expect, to be fair, to across parties, I think there's been broad support for this, but it is urgent, it's needed, and I don't think we need months to parse through it. This is a structural change in the board, the number of board members, and how the corporate governance of the board, which obviously had been lacking over the last number of years, is actually put right. So this is one piece of the jigsaw. And
But there's one thing that jumped out at me, that the idea to provide in exceptional circumstances for the accelerated delivery of social housing on local authority lands without the normal plan and prerequisites, such as environmental impact assessments. Now, that's the Liz Truss style of planning.
No, actually, with environmental impact assessments, and I read that article, that's actually incorrect, because what we're looking at is for land that's already been identified, either for social housing to expedite it or additional lands that are actually appropriate for it, that we would have be able to fast-track planning in that space for social housing delivery to further ramp up. Like, this year, we'll deliver 10,500.
But the whole question of an environmental impact study.
Oh, we're not going to set that aside. And I read that in the article. That's actually incorrect. And what I'd say to you is, environmental impact assessments and screenings are important. We will be able to do it in areas where that would not be required. And it's not a question of riding roughshod over any of that. That is not the proposal. And I think
the other thing we read is that access to judicial review would be limited in a future planning situation. Judicial review is often the last recourse that communities have against bad planning decisions. And, you know, they were bad planning decisions by the board because they were overturned by the courts. So that's all the evidence you need that the decision was wrong. The courts turned them over. Why would you limit that kind of democratic access to the courts for bad planning? Because even Homer nods, and certainly the board nodded many, many times in recent years.
No, well, this relates to some of the reforms I'll be bringing forward in the Consolidated Planning Bill, and that will go to for pre-legislative scrutiny and will be published and people will see it. I firmly believe that people need to have their say in planning, and we're not going to restrict that. And one of the reasons that I think there have been so many judicial reviews was because of the SHD process, which was this fast-track planning, planning going straight to the board, and communities felt that they'd no other option but to go to the courts. But I've stopped SHDs. I've stopped that process, as I said I would, and I've brought planning back to local authorities. And we need an efficient and effective planning system, Pat, that absolutely respects the right of people to have their say. Yeah. But we can't have developments either, good developments and strategic developments, held up for years and years. Yeah. So it's about finding a balance between... Yeah.
But again, the suggestion we made to you many times on the programme is, you know, have a rules-based system so everybody knows where they stand.
Exactly.
So the developer won't chance his or her arm going in. The council know what the rules are. Their county development plan is there. They know what's allowed. And the punter who lives in the area knows what's allowed as well. So, you know, that would
exactly
be much more efficient. Well, I'm looking forward
exactly
to seeing the detail of that. By the way, some good news for you. Eurozone inflation falls for the first time in 17 months, which looks like a smaller ECB hike might be on the cards, and inflation might just be peaking and going downwards on the other side of this, but we'll hold our breath on that one. Minister, rental market shrinking by 43,000 homes in 5 years over the last 5 years because landlords are getting out. I know you need the mom and pop landlord, so what are you going to do to keep them?
Well, look, as you rightly say, we've seen the individual mom and pop landlords leave over the last number of years for a variety of reasons, one of them being, you know, people are either retiring, it was their pension pot, or they've seen house prices go up, they may have been in negative equity and they're selling out. So that's why we need to increase supply. Now, one of the things we've done, and we've done successfully already, is to roll out what's called cost rental, which is state-backed affordable rental, and we've hundreds of tenancies in place already. It didn't exist 12 months ago, so the state needs to fill that gap. But in my own belief as well is that we need to, you know, try to improve the lot for good landlords that are there too, whilst we're ensuring that tenants have really good protections. And it is a concern to me to see a continued flight of landlords from the market. I've met with them as I meet with tenants on a regular basis, and, you know, a number of things in relation to taxation have been raised, no question. Now, we have made changes in the finance bill around pre-letting expenses. Minister Donoghue has brought in a significant change there. And also in relation
But still, besides what's allowable, you know, the REITs have one set of rules for them. The mom and pop landlords have another set of rules for them. They end up paying, you know, more than half the take on and tax, which the REITs don't do. And like many of these investment trusts are based outside the state. So the taxation that you normally get from the landlord is when if they're a corporate landlord, they declare their profits and it's taxed. So you get your whack there, or investors get taxed. But if all the investors are outside the jurisdiction, no tax paid.
Yeah, and I know that's something that Minister Donoghue and the Department of Finance are actually reviewing at the moment, and that is being reviewed. We do need rental properties, be they through mom-and-pop landlords or indeed investors. We need to have, as you mentioned earlier on, every additional unit helps in all areas of the housing situation that we're dealing with. So, you know, we need rental properties for people for the right time of their life when they want to rent. But what I find is most renters actually are not renting by choice. They want to be able to buy. And, you know, that's why we kept things like the Help to Buy grant, which has helped over 32,000 households get their deposit together, and why I've rolled out things like the First Home Scheme, which bridges the gap between the finance someone has and the finance they need by the state stepping in and taking an equity. And just since July, we've seen nearly 800 approvals. And that's helping people, many of whom have been renting to be able to go and buy their home at an affordable rate, and that's starting to take hold.
All of these schemes are you know, worthwhile. Everything contributes a little bit to solving the problem. But you know, we used to in this country decry the absentee landlords of the 19th century. We have a larger and larger cohort of absentee landlords. Pension funds, trust funds from outside the state. We don't know who they are, what they are, and they are renting to our people and extracting cash out of our economy, which doesn't stay here. It goes to Canada, the United States, Japan, wherever. Is there anything we can do to limit the absentee landlordism that is now rife?
Well, what we've actually seen already in new property purchases, Pat, I have actually limited, I've restricted and actually banned completely the bulk purchase of houses and duplexes, and we've brought in for the first time in planning a condition for an owner-occupier condition, and that's actually about 18,000 properties that have been granted permission already since I brought that in just over a year ago have that condition in them. So it's levelling the playing pitch for the first-time buyer or the homeowner against some of the bigger funds. Like, we need the appropriate investment in the right places. It's not like if we're to build 33,000 homes per year on average, and we need more than that, that requires about 12 billion euro in finance. We're putting in through Housing for All about 4 to 4.5 billion. The rest is private finance that funds new developments, not just rental, but funds developments for private purchases. And we need that. So it's about a balance between making sure we get investment in, be that domestic or international, and also the state being the biggest actor in that, because we are putting in the biggest single chunk on behalf of the taxpayer, on behalf of the people who are waiting on social housing lists or who want to buy their own homes. And that's important that we get the balance right.
One text here about the rental thing. The politicians don't get it. It's not low rents or high property prices that are driving landlords out of the market. It is the continuous erosion of their rights and the fear of losing control of their properties. The eviction ban will simply accelerate the exodus. In other words, as soon as they can, March comes, they'll sell up.
Look, the eviction ban, the winter eviction ban, was an exceptional measure during emergency times and feeds into the other discussion that we had, certainly in relation to helping accommodate our friends from Ukraine and that, where there is a shrunken supply of rental accommodation. And we need to protect people through this winter with the cost of living crisis that's there as well. So it's a one-off measure to give us some breathing space as well to bring additional properties on stream. I think it is necessary because we need to balance the protections for tenants, which I have done through rent caps as well that I've brought through, but whilst respecting the rights of the property
owner. No, but we talked before about the BTR. You know, a landlord goes to the BTR, says can't get rid of the tenant, they haven't paid rent, da da da, or the RTB, 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 of 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 the RTB.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.